Om Shanti. Good morning, everyone. Very, very warm welcome to Sister Moni. It's lovely to have you here with us. Well, Sister Moni came to Baba in 1977, and she did for 30 years service in Asia, mainly in Hong Kong, Cambodia, and India. And for the last 3 years, she is back in Australia, and there she is in charge of Baba's national office. And her specialty is spiritual research, and she loves to go deep. So today's topic is really her topic, slowing down for deeper transformation. So enjoy it.
Thank you. Good morning, Om Shanti. Good. Yes, so this topic, you know, in the world is speeding up, and often we get the feedback that we also have to think fast and be fast, and, you know, it's kind of valued. It's being fast is valued in this world. But actually research, scientific research, is proving that it is not effective, that doing things fast actually is not helpful for ourselves. So this is what we're going to explore a bit today. So many years ago, Daddy Jenki used to have this almost like a mantra, don't think, don't think. And that's part of this slowing down. Actually, the most part of slowing down is not thinking too much. And mostly, we think about what? We think about people, things, and time. People, things, and time. And people who don't meditate probably only think about people, things, and time. So if we were not thinking about people, things, or time, what would we be thinking about? What would we be thinking about if we don't think about people, things, or time? Sanskars, memories, what else, yeah? Situations? Usually situations are connected with people and things and time. So not people, things, and time. What would we think about? Body's a thing. The body is a thing. So that's included in people, things, and time. So what would we think about if we were not to think of people, things, and time? That's time. Past and future is also time. That's people. That's people. Problems is usually to do with people, things, and time. Come on, what would we think about if we did not think about people, things, or time? God. God is not a people thing or time, actually. You know, he hasn't got a body, so in that sense he's not a people. So the soul, myself, I'm not actually a people, a thing, or a time. I'm a soul. Values, virtues, peace, love, happiness, are they people, things, or time? No. Right? So what we have to check as yogis is how much we think about things that are not people, things, and time. And check for yourself, which one do you think about the most? When I heard this, I thought, maybe I think about time more than anything. I'm quite time conscious. So we have to see what we are thinking about. But we have to make sure that we are spending sufficient amount of time going beyond people, things and time. Because people, things and time belong to this dimension. And what we call the things of this dimension. What's one word to describe the energy of this drama? How would you describe the energy associated with this material world, people, things and time? Could be impure, but not necessarily, but we usually call it gross, right? Gross. Gross meaning it can be weighed, it can be measured. People, things and time is all measurable. So the things of this level is gross. Which, it's not necessarily bad. We need some amount of gross things. We need a certain amount of thinking about gross things. But the thing is not to get trapped by the gross and not to overthink about things that are gross. And the soul, what is that energy of the soul? So there's the gross and then there's subtle, or you could even just say light. The most common experience that people have in meditation is a feeling of lightness. Because whenever we're detached from the body, we feel light. If we're given anesthesia, we will feel light. You know, when we become bodiless, when we think beyond people, things and time, we feel light. So the energy of at that level of soul is light. And then one step further, the energy of the Supreme, of Baba, of God, how would you describe that? From your experience, how would you describe that? What is that energy? A loving silence. I would say it's true, but loving silence is maybe included in an overall kind of energy. If you would describe it as an energy, like gross, light. Powerful? Did I hear powerful? Yeah. When I was thinking about this, I was thinking power. But then I was thinking purity. And I thought, is it power? Is it purity? And I thought, pure power is really how I would. You can think yourself how you would describe it, but I would describe it as pure power. And it's the kind of power of pure air. Pure air is so powerful, but so subtle. It's such a pure power. Or water, pure water. It's very powerful, but it's a very subtle power. Even pure food, like food that's cooked in remembrance. No one can measure that kind of power. But it's a certain power. So, gross, light, and pure power. So when we're in the gross level, then what we're doing is spending energy. We're using energy. So it's not wrong. We need it. But of course we have to be economical. So we need to check that we're not overspending at this level. Means overthinking, overconnecting, using too much. Because every time we're at a gross level, we're using our energy. Is it right? Can you see that? We're using our energy. So if we use and we don't fill, we get so tired and so drained. If we're at the level of soul, then I would say we're pretty much maintaining. We're not using, but we're not necessarily, to some extent, we're filling, but mostly it's a maintenance. So often we feel at Amrit Vela, we might not be having a connection even. We might not be feeling a great power. But there's a feeling of like a real maintenance that's going on. Do you feel that? It might not be an experience, but when we meditate regularly, it's like we're maintaining ourselves, at least we're maintaining ourselves. But then, of course, if we're connecting, even 1 second gives us so much energy, doesn't it? Like in Amrit Vela, if you just get really connected even for a second, you feel charged for the whole day. And that's just a second. Imagine if it was a full blast. In fact, in electronics, they use this measurement of what they call Ohm's law, OHM, right? To measure the power coming through. It's the source divided by the resistance. So you get 220 volt, 110. It's the source divided by the resistance, right? Right? Yeah? So in the same way, we have Ohm's law, OM, and that is the source divided by our resistance. If we had no resistance, we would be just blasted. And we do get that experience sometimes. So that's the next thing to check. So first thing to check, how much I'm on the level of people, things and time, gross. The next thing, how much I'm really connecting and opening, because what is that resistance? What is the resistance that we're having? Do you have any resistance to Baba? What is that? Why do we resist? But what sanskars? What is it? Come on, some of the things that are creating that resistance. One of the biggest things is body consciousness. Because when we're in the consciousness of the body, then it's like, it's again going back to electronics, the two wires can't connect. When we remove the rubber of the wires, they connect, right? But if there's body consciousness, Bubba's the live wire, but if I've got body consciousness, I can't get anything coming through. And I think you also share that experience that I have sometimes, that it's almost unconnected, but it's just like a very, very thin veil, not even a gross body conscious, but just, there's just something. But what we have to do is remove all that resistance. So the biggest one, of course, is the consciousness of the body, which is why we keep hearing be bodiless, practice being bodiless, because we need to be in that state of soul consciousness so that we can connect, so that we can remember Baba. So one of the biggest is that body consciousness. And secondly, which is a very major one for most of us, most people in the world, lack of self-respect. We have a deep belief that we're not worthy, most of us at some level, and it varies from extreme to very minor. But if we don't feel worthy of Baba's love, then there's a resistance. And you know what happens, you make a mistake and then you feel that Baba can't love you because you're bad. So that's one of them. How can Baba love me? I've done this. Is it true? Does he stop his love if you make a mistake? Does he? What does your teaching say? What does Baba tell us? No. But we think we are not worthy. So we resist because of not feeling worthy. So of course there's many, many resistances. Of course any kind of attachment is going to pull us away. So there's all of these things that get in the way between just having a connection. So we need to remove all of those. And of course it's a big job, you know, we really would become a teat if we didn't have any of those. But we do get experiences from time to time of a full connection, right? Sometimes it's a full connection. Sometimes it's, you know, any level up to that. So we need to, you know, think about this gross light and pure power and remove any resistance so I can make that connection. So all of that really needs me to slow down, because I need to do a lot of checking. And if I'm just keeping myself busy, then I hardly have time to really seriously do the work of analyzing and really kind of seeing what my reactions are and things like that. So there's that thing that happens. We sometimes keep ourselves busy, even in service, so that we don't have to look at ourselves. So we don't, but that's not going to do the work. We really do need to be able to observe ourselves, our reactions. Because really what meditation is going into the subconscious and looking at all those reactions and cleaning it up, you know. And what they say in neuroscience is what fires together, wires together. This is what we call sanskars, right? If, for example, you were attacked by a dog, then when you saw a dog, you would associate it with pain, fear. But another person who has an experience of another dog, maybe from childhood, has had a very loving relationship with a dog. So it's not the dog, it's the connection. It's the firing and wiring. Can you see that? That's what a sanskar is. So what we need to do, if there, for example, I mean, this is just a gross example, if we saw a dog that was like looking very happy and like very friendly, and I had a fear, then of course I have to see that my reaction is not appropriate. So I have to look and see, where is this reaction coming from? And of course, that's a very gross example, but to give you a very practical one, there was a sister who was staying at one of the centres I was at, and she was going to fry something. And she took out this wok, this pot, to fry. And I very nicely and calmly and not in any reaction, I said to her, usually when we fry, we use the other pan because, you know, it's kind of black and spoilt already because it's been used for frying. You know, when you fry in things, it gets a little bit marked. That's all I said to her. And she had such a big reaction. She said, I can never do anything right. I'm always doing the wrong thing. And it was really, I could tell you, not the way I said it or what I said, but it was triggering something. In fact, she told me later that something was going on and that was just the trigger. But you can see, you know, the firing and wiring. She hears a correction or a suggestion and associates that with something. So that happens. You know, this happens. So what we need to do is look at those reactions and think, what's going on here? Because actually the way the person spoke was not aggressive, was not putting me down, but I had this big reaction. Because there's a lot of this, you know, we're all kind of what they call hardwired in this way, with all our past experiences. So what we're doing in meditation is going into the subconscious and really, you know, disconnecting. Because these are just sanskars. They're just something that has, you know, fired and wired together. So what I need to do is to free up all of that. And the way we do that is through the way we teach Raja Yoga meditation. Because what do we do in Raja Yoga meditation? We say, I am a being of peace. So I'm actually creating a new what they call a neural pathway, but what I'm doing is creating new, you know, like instead of this, I'm creating thoughts like this. And I keep feeding that. And I experience it in meditation. Because, you know, with positive, all that positive thinking, not our course, I'm saying, you know, all that kind of affirmation and things like that, I can say, I am a being of peace. But, you know, do I believe it? So this is where we need to use our intellect so that we can, you know, really be very sure that that's correct. But even the intellect can only just rationalize. I need to experience. And that's what Baba was saying the other day, that experience is authority. So when I experience, then I'm in authority. So those things, those kind of thought patterns become stronger and stronger the more I create these thoughts. And that actually helps with not having resistance then. So nowadays, I don't know about in your countries, but in most of the countries I've been, mindfulness is so popular. Is mindfulness meditation very popular in your countries? Extreme, yeah. In Australia, mindfulness is being taught in a 6-week course. So you can do a 6-week course and you can become a meditation facilitator. I mean, it's pretty interesting. But this mindfulness is very, very popular. And mostly what people are doing in mindfulness is watching the breath and basically trying not to think. In fact, one of our BKs was teaching mindfulness meditation in a health center. She was paid. She was teaching mindfulness. And one of the students complained because she was teaching them to think. Because that's not what most people want. People don't want to think. That's very interesting. So she had to keep to the curriculum, you know, not mix it with Raj Yoga. But what we are doing, what Raj Yoga is doing, what this method of meditation is really creative thinking. So we're actually learning how to think and teaching people how to think. And it's so powerful and effective. And so because of all this mindfulness, especially, mostly when I'm talking to people, I describe our meditation as creative thinking, just to give them a different angle on what meditation is. And I heard something a while ago. It said that, well, I'll ask you, what's the opposite to war? What do you think is the opposite to war? A lot of people say peace, but if someone was kind of attacking you and you just sit there and do nothing, what will happen? Usually it doesn't. I mean, if you're very powerful, maybe with your thoughts you can be quite effective. But mostly, like even if a country is attacking your country and you all just sat there peacefully. So what I heard, which I've thought about a lot for the last 5-6 years, the opposite to war is creativity. Because actually what we need, and I'm not talking about just a war, but even with the wars that are going on, if we're a bit more creative, we could actually find solutions. But even on a personal level, the daily wars that are going on between me and others or myself and situations, if I can be creative, I can find solutions. So, you know, creativity, I would say, is probably one of the most important things that I can bring into my life, creativity. And that's what we're practicing. And that's why Baba always keeps saying newness, 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 newness. I interpret that now as creative, 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 because we really need to think differently. We need to have a new idea. And just to give you two examples, there was a person I met, because one of the things I was doing is living in India for a few years, working on the future of power programs. I was meeting all these leaders, and I met someone who had a very big coal business, you know, coal. So he was mining, shipping coal throughout India. And one day someone came into his office and held a gun at him, and he said to the person, "Come on, let's sit down and talk." So that he got that person to sit down and talk. Then he asked that person, "You know, what do you want? What do you want? What are you doing here? What do you want?" And what he came to understand, and you know, there's many examples of this I've collected since then, but what he came to understand is that people like him, you know, are making millions of rupees, and other people are just getting, you know, poorer. The rich get richer, right? And the poor get poorer. So often people that are doing this kind of thing, because it was a whole gang, often people who are doing these things are desperate. You know, they can't get anything legally. So they, you know, they start doing things that whatever they can do to provide for their community, their families. I'm not saying it's right, but if you understand what's going on. So he understood and he said, "Well, why don't you and your team be the guards on the highway to protect my trucks, and I'll pay you." Right? Smart? Very smart. But creative. You know, if he had reacted, if he had been afraid, you know, he probably would be dead now. But we can be creative in looking for solutions. And the other one was a person who was in Thailand, and he was doing construction, and these triad or gangsters, whatever you call them, came and they were demanding a big bribe. So this person said, "Look, I don't pay bribes," but, you know, he again discovered that the main reason why this person was doing it is because their community was impoverished. So he said, "Look, rather than a bribe, what if I build a clinic in your community's name after the first phase and then a school after the second phase? Is that okay?" They said, "Very happy." You know, so if we just react, then we're not going to find any solutions. And the word peace, you know, I was asked many years ago, "What is the definition of peace? You're talking all about peace, peace, peace. What is peace?" Okay, I'm going to ask you, what is peace? What would you say to somebody who just said, "What is peace?" What is peace? What is peace? That's nice. When we have the ability not to let anyone steal our happiness and our peace of mind. Stable. Stability. Peace is stability. Huh? Peace is inside, but what is inside? Peace is inside, but what is the peace? So when they asked me that, I was thinking, Luckily, I was in Philippines, and the person translating, I said to the person, "What's the literal translation of the word that you're using?" And she said, "Clear mind." And I've never found a better definition of peace. Peace is to have a clear mind, which means not to react to anything. That is very powerful. The other thing is, people think that peace is very passive, it's very weak, you know, but actually a clear mind is very, very powerful. So if we're going to be creative, we also need to be able to have a clear mind, because what happens is we react. Whenever something happens, normally people react. And if we react, it's the opposite to being, if we're reactive, it's the opposite of being creative. In fact, the word, you'll have to do it in your mind if you know English, creative and reactive. It's exactly the same letters. The only difference is where you put the C. So we say, it all depends how you see things. Write it down, creative and reactive. And it's only where the C is. But if we're reactive, then we can't be creative. So we can't actually save ourselves in any situation if we're reactive. We've got no power. And then we just get into this big, big, long journey of reacting and then something and then, you know what it's like. One thing leads to another, leads to another, leads to another. But if we can just not react, be creative, then we're Rajyogis. We're in control of what's going on. So creativity is very, very valuable, and you might find it's useful to describe our meditation as creative meditation, because I was finding it very difficult to get around this mindfulness stuff because it's so popular and people really like it, but it's just emptying the mind, watching the breath, which is almost like a mantra. Breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out. But we can, I think attract people with creativity because I think everyone realizes that creativity is very important. Then what they've been doing with studying the mind, when they study the brain waves, so scientists are studying the brain waves and they say that, there's beta, alpha, theta and delta. And Dadi Jenke, as you know, has been, said to be able to create that delta state. But just simply, when we're in normal gross thinking, we're in that beta state. It's not bad if it's just normal thinking, but if we think too much and too fast, we're in that really high beta. And every time we think, our body creates chemical. Whenever we think, we're creating chemicals. When we're thinking in a stress state or in a very hyperactive state, we're creating the chemical called cortisol, which is a stress hormone. So I think when your body is feeling, like when you're feeling stressed, it's almost like this inside. Do you feel that? Like, and that's why meditation is so good for healing, because the body has a built-in immune system that is meant to be, there's cells that go to parts of the body to heal it. But if we're in a state of stress and creating cortisol, we can't heal. And so we need to slow down our thoughts. If we slow down to alpha, which is like relaxed, we're already starting to produce good chemicals like serotonin, which is the chemical for happiness, serotonin, melatonin, which is relaxation. But what's really interesting is they say when we go to the next level of theta, so when we've slowed down from beta, alpha to theta, in that state of theta, the very interesting thing that I researched was that only at that level can you really change. So we want to change. I mean, we all want to improve something about ourselves and we want to, finish all the old habits and things. If we don't come down to that still mind, we cannot change. I found that fascinating because everyone wants to change, even we want to change, and sometimes we get so frustrated because it's been so many years and we still have those old habits. And what, you know, the scientists are saying is that we can't change unless we're, our thoughts have brought us into that space of quiet. And also in that space, in that theta state, we create what they call catecholamines. And catecholamines are for, you can Google all this, it's nothing that's not out there, but catecholamines are for memory. So that's, you know, helpful for learning and memory. So the topic of this retreat was for self-learning. So that's why I thought this topic of slowing down is so appropriate, because only if we slow down can we change, can we learn. I'll leave you to go away and think about that, but I just find that very, very important and useful information, because otherwise we're just going to be getting more and more frustrated at not being able to change. And Baba one time spoke about this in a muli. He said that what often happens is we get kind of, we get positive and we have a lot of good thoughts about what we're going to change, and we get enthusiastic and we create plans. But Baba mentioned in that muli, if you've got too many, then what happens is you end up getting depressed, because when you can't bring the change, then you get disheartened. So even though the intention, you know, those thoughts were very good, the end result is not good. And what Baba said in that muli was so beautiful. He says that our thoughts need to be like an evergreen spring season. So beautiful. That our thoughts need to be like an evergreen spring season. So I thought when I read this thing about these theta state, that's like an evergreen spring season where there's stability, like you were talking about, that stability. There's the right, and that's what Baba was talking about in that muli, the right speed of thoughts. He was talking about that, the right speed of thoughts, so that the thoughts that you're creating, you can actually carry through with. And that's also what Baba defines as perfection, that when our thoughts, words and actions are equal. But often our thoughts are not matched by our words, and even less matched by our actions. So this evergreen spring season is this state. And then you go down to delta, which is really, really slow. And that's what, I don't know, there was some controversy about those tests that Daddy did. I don't really know all that controversy. But what she was describing, Daddy was herself describing what happened when they put her on those machines in Australia. She'd done a program and she was a little bit tired, like she'd finished a program. And students from the university kind of got hold of her and wanted to test her. And so she said okay, and they wired her all up. And then they got her to count backwards from 1,000 by 7. And these were Australian people, and she's like not real good in English. But so she was kind of describing that it wasn't all that easy, the whole thing, what was going on. But she was asked to count backwards from 1,000 by 7, and they tried to get her to be angry. And she was, you know, sharing the experience that she had. But I think you know that they recorded delta waves, and they actually tested the machines, because they said it's not possible to be active and have delta waves, because usually delta waves are only recorded in a deep state of sleep, not normal sleep, deep sleep. So that's the level that we'd really like to reach, where, you know, there's hardly any thought at all. Recently, they've come across another brainwave, the last 5-6 years, that they talk about called gamma. Now, gamma is really interesting because they talk about slowing down, and the whole thing is about slowing down the thoughts, slowing down. More your thoughts are slow, more powerful, more effective. Oh, I tell you one other thing that the scientists say. If you slow down your thoughts from beta to alpha, they are 7 times more powerful. It means that you have 7 times more chance of that thought becoming a reality, right? 7 times. But in delta, it is 35 times more powerful. So it means when you have a thought in delta, there's 35 times more chance of that thought happening. And I don't know what you experience, but I experience that nearly everything I think happens. So I don't know if I have delta thoughts. You know, we don't know. But why I'm curious as to what the scientists are doing is because I think we are the ones that are experiencing it all, because they are studying people who meditate. So we are the ones experiencing it, and they're just kind of giving the results. And Baba in the Moolies in the 80s, they're probably coming up around, even recently there was one, but in a few Moolies, Baba was saying, the scientists will come and test us to see, you know, what's going on with our brains. And, you know, we can all think for ourselves, are you ready? If the scientists put you on a machine, would you be pretty impressive? Huh? Would they be impressed? What do you think? Huh? And at the moment, they're really only testing Buddhists. You know, nearly all the results are tests on Buddhist monks. And I'm always thinking, how come they don't test us? But I think we're not ready because we have to really show something. If they test us and we're not impressive, they'll go away. So that's my latest kind of passion, to really do a lot more work to make this laboratory very interesting and to create some great things. And I, again, have been inspired by a person that recently came to give a talk at our center. He was 19 years old and he had a car accident, and he totally smashed up one leg, not just broke, but smashed, broken. But what happened, and this is what was very interesting, he said for 10 days, didn't put him on any painkillers, he didn't feel his body. Now, normally that would be quite painful, right? And he was not in a coma. He was conscious. He could talk to people. And he was curious as to where was I that I didn't feel my body? Where was I? Right? So he started to explore meditation and, you know, the mind and all these things, because he wanted to know, how come I didn't feel any pain for 10 days? How is that possible? Right? So actually, we have access to those realms. That's what our job is, to be able to tell people, to be able to experience for ourselves and to teach people to go there. Isn't it? Isn't it our job? If it's not our job, whose job is it? And if we can't experience, then who can? Because what also we have to give ourselves credit for, because some of these scientists are saying, well, you know, you really have to have that discipline, and it's really hard to make time for meditation to get the kind of results that are absolutely amazing. And when I read that, I thought, But look at us, we give time. 4 o'clock every morning, we sit for 45 minutes. Now, that's amazing, isn't it? How many people in the world would give that time to sit at the best time of day, to sit for 45 minutes, an hour? You know, we are meant to have at least 2 hours proper concentrated meditation a day. That's a big commitment. I mean, compare yourself to people in the world. Is it not great? Are we not great? Are we not great? Yeah? We really are. I mean, we have the interest, we have the dedication. But the question is, are we getting the results? That's the question. Are we? Yeah? Great results. Considerably great. Could there be more? Much more. I think we're getting considerably great results, but, you know, when we listen to the Avyakta Mulis, any Avyakta Muli, we know the bar, right? The bar is here, isn't it? What Baba's saying, like, we should be able to, just by looking at someone, bring them into an awareness of who they are. That's the bar. We should be able to reach people on the other side of the world. We should be able to create the atmosphere, transform an atmosphere. Right? So the bar, every Avyakta Muli is kind of giving us the bar that we need to reach. And I don't think many of us could really say that we're reaching that yet. And yet, we're at the end. Are we at the end or not? Or you think there's another 50 years to go? Do you all agree we're at the end? We're at the end. So if not now, never. If not now, then when are we going to actually live up to... You know, Baba doesn't just say it just to... I mean, it's not story time, right? It's not story time. It's what we can do, what we are meant to do. It's what we're born to do. It's our destiny. Is it not our destiny? It is our destiny. It is our purpose. We are the chosen ones, in a way, because we answered the call. So, you know, if we're not experiencing what the Avyakta Muli is kind of telling us we are meant to be experiencing, then we still have a bit of work to do. But at least we're putting in the time, we're putting in the effort, it's our priority. So compared to the world, we're way ahead. And it's possible. Right? It's possible. Because we are Brahmins. We are following the highest code of conduct so that we can achieve all of this. If we don't follow the highest code of conduct, it's also not possible. We know that. You know, the pure food, the pure thoughts, the purity and celibacy, all of that. We're following all of this so that we can attain that. So we're on the track. We're on the track, but we need to do more laboratory work. Baba says it's like inside there's a laboratory and we need to go in and really work and experiences. So there is a little bit of work to do. And one of the things I remember Daddy Janki saying is the only effort we need to make. Do you want to know the only to make? The one and only effort we need to make? Do you want to know? What do you think? The one and only effort we need to make, according to Daddy. She said, the only effort we need to make is not to worry. Think about it. It covers the whole lot, really. Because all those excess thoughts is what's called worry. Right? The only effort we need to make is not to worry. Sound easy? Is it easy? Sounds easy. But not worrying is not that easy. Means not having any extra thoughts. So I didn't talk yet about those gamma waves because I think this leads into it. Gamma waves are very interesting because they're very, 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 very fast. You know, all the others are slow, slow, slow. And gamma is what they call the aha. And I would say, because they don't know what it is, they are trying to kind of experiment and work them out. What I would say it is, based on experience, is the aha, is the bliss. You know, when we're in bliss, peace, love, happiness, power, it's all like, you know, it's just there, seed stage. Seed stage is that stage. So it's just like, seed stage is when everything is like I am, and it's like a seed that hasn't sprouted. I'm just potential. I'm just pure potential. And the seed stage, I would say, is that gamma state where it's like, you know, it's just blissful. It's there's no thought. So gamma is where we need to, what we need to experience as a result of being able to bring the mind down to one point, concentration. Oh yeah, so why it's speedy, what's the difference? Because beta is only like, high beta is about 30. Okay, well, good, this can lead into our question answer time. So the difference between the beta fast, beta is only like 30 and it's stress and you produce this stress hormone, it's not good news. But gamma is like 1,000. It's 700, 1,000. But the difference is that beta is like this. It's disconnected. It's like, whereas in that fast one of gamma, it's holistic. That's what they describe it as, that you're thinking very fast, but it's harmonized. Whereas beta is disjointed. Very interesting. So I would say it's because of concentration. Because you know when you can concentrate well, it's like a blast. It's like so powerful and it's high energy, but it's harmonized. So, other questions? Was this complicated? Was this... Sorry. Not sure how to read your faces out there. Any questions? Yeah, the question is, why are we not getting the results? Are we doing the wrong kind of work in the laboratory? I think we're just not thinking clearly enough. You know, like, it's surprising how dull our intellects have become. Like, for example, Baba was talking, you know, at one time a lot, he still is, but about the bodiless stage. And this was like 20 years ago, I can remember. And I was practicing the bodiless stage because Baba kept saying, be bodiless. And then I just suddenly kind of woke up and I thought, actually, what is the bodiless stage? Am I really clear as to what is the bodiless stage? And I realized I was practicing the bodiless stage based on some vague understanding, you know, something very vague. I wasn't clear what is the bodiless stage. And I thought, how dull is my intellect? How can I practice something I don't really understand? You know, I think we're doing that too much. So what I did is I focus my effort on, first of all, I went to the tape library. In those days it was tapes. I went to the tape library and took out the tapes on the bodiless stage. There were a few. And I found no one went into it. They talk about bodiless in that vague way for 5 minutes and then change the topic. So I didn't find anyone else really being very clear based on their experience as to what is the bodiless stage.
So I realize I have to have my own clear experience of the bodiless stage, so I know what I'm doing. You get it? You know? So then I sat to concentrate on the bodiless stage. And again, we're often not practicing Raja Yoga as we teach it. Because what we say is that we need to think and go deeply into that till we get the experience. Is that right? Is that what Raja Yoga is? How much do we do that? I think often we're very wishy-washy and not really. And for me, I would say it's because of this lazy mind. Like, you know, I sit at Amrit Vela, I'm fresh, I'm not tired. And I think, come on, do something. Do something. You know, the mind just doesn't do anything. It just sits there in a lazy way. And I think something, make some experience, connect with Baba. And it just kind of sits there. Do you get that experience? So what is that laziness? That's why I think we need more creativity, because there's a laziness. So when I did that practice of the bodiless stage, for me, because I have a very kind of strong background of Buddhism, even though I only practiced it 2 years, I've been teaching in Buddhist countries for 26 years, and I actually have a very close affinity to Buddhism. I like it. I study it, and Buddha actually, this just as a side thing, when people ask me, is the Brahma Kumaris Hindu? I say it's pre-Hindu. Because actually it's pre-Hindu. The Vedas and all the things that are associated with Raja Yoga in the Lokic sense is all pre-Hindu. And so when they ask about Buddha, I say, well, he was pre-Hindu. He wasn't a Hindu, but he was Indian, right? They say he was a Hindu prince, but he actually wasn't a Hindu prince because he was pre-Hindu. He was a Indian prince, and he actually studied Raja Yoga. That's what it says in some of the Buddhist books. He studied Raja Yoga. So, you know, he was a very good teacher of meditation. That's why I do study some of his things, because they're very clear. So when we're, you know, went with this bodiless stage, I had to have my own personal experience. And for me, the experience was, I'm nothing and no one. I'm nothing and I'm no one. And that's what the bodiless stage for me was, because my experience was that I had no personality, no gender, no nationality. I was just a soul. So I was nothing. I was no thing and I was no one. And because of that, I felt I could be such a clear instrument for Baba. So in that bodiless stage, I felt like Baba could use me, that I was just a clear, pure instrument. So that was my experience of the bodiless stage. And interestingly, in neuroscience, that's also what they say, that because we are, okay, now I'm going to complicate, we are 99.99999% energy. This body is only 0.00001% particle. Can you imagine? All of this is not solid, really. That's what scientists have researched and they tell us. So they, in this neuroscience, they say, we are more nothing than something, right? We are nothing and no one, more nothing and no one than something and someone. We are 99.99999% energy. So it was interesting that was my experience, the nothing and no one. And it ties very well into actually the reality that we are nothing and no one. So, yeah. Yeah, so the... emotion can be devotional. Emotion can be very deep. So, what's the question? So, the question is, if there is very deep love for Baba, then can we get this stage? Absolutely, because that's reality. So whenever we touch reality, like the nothing, the no one, love, peace, happiness, it's powerful because truth is powerful. And truth is not divided. So if it's real love, it's so powerful because it's just concentrated. You know, love is love. Love is love. Peace is peace. So in its truth, when it's true love, it is unmixed, it's powerful, it's concentrated. It is that gamma state. Pure love, pure peace, pure happiness. It is gamma because it's essence. And we experience it, right? Working from the question is about the left brain and the right brain. Actually, that is very important for learning. You've probably covered it a bit already. But yeah, we have to keep using both sides of the brain. And that's why, you know, we are often not using our brain. And that's why we're not getting the experiences, because we don't have that balance. We're often very left brain and don't do enough of the creative, experiential. Yeah. So we need that balance. The intellect would help us to create the balance, because the intellect, in fact, if you look at nature, all of nature seeks balance. If it's too hot or too dry, then this happens, that happens. Nature is constantly seeking balance. So we also need balance. And that's also a very big misunderstanding, that perfection is up here. It's not, it's here. When we're balanced, we'll be perfect. Not when we climb up there somewhere. That makes us imbalanced, right? When we're trying to do some effort in this way, it doesn't give us a good result. Sometimes that's the reason why we're not also getting the results, because we're going out of balance. But balance is perfection. Okay, good, because it's just a few minutes before. So we'll finish with maybe take one point that you touched you this morning and just think deeply on that. Oh, a question. What's the step to change from the habit of reacting to the habit of creating? And I think that's where we go back to thinking more slowly. That's why I think we can't change unless we are in theta, unless we slow down our thinking. Because if we don't slow down our thinking, it's our habit to react. We're not conscious. So consciousness is the main thing. And that includes everything, taking self-responsibility, not blaming others, you know, all the teachings that we have really are bringing it back to being conscious and choosing each step, rather than reacting is our biggest downfall. That's habit. Yeah, so be conscious, be aware, be alert. Another good word, yeah. Okay, so we can finish and have the announcement. Anna? Oh, okay, yeah. Okay, so I'll guide a little bit of a experience. So, Anna first. Okay. I can repeat it if it's not long. But what she said is that this, whatever was talked about today will be connected with the bhati this evening, so it's good leading into it.
Hello?
Should be. No, it's fine.
Got it. Yes. Before anything else, just to say that there was a thought in the mind while listening to Sister Morni that all this gold, because somehow there was so much freshness and depth and lightness and informative, because it comes not from an intellectual knowledge but from the experience over the years. So thank you very much for this, for the inspiration, really. And also, many of the points that were shared are inspiring for us, but also preparing for tonight's bhati that is aiming to be clear, knowing what we are doing, being very clear about the aim and the experience. And we're going to have some thoughts being shared that will play the role of creating the same experience, because then it's more powerful. And although there are going to be some clarifications during the bhati, some themes, some comments, the aim is absolutely the experience, so we can come out from this bhati feeling that we are authorities of experience, and some clarity on what we aim for. So you're most welcome to join. I think it's here, 5:30. We don't know, so it's not clear. But it starts 5:30. Thank you.
Okay, so we'll just finish with a few minutes of connection. So in these few minutes, let me leave all the things that are gross down below, all the thoughts about people, things, and time. And taste the experience of the pure power. Joy.
bliss. Let me be aware of how much I'm spending maintaining and filling. And of course, the aim is to keep connected and to keep filling so that naturally it can flow out to all.